Dude, I'm glad we finally got to do this.
Man, I'm pumped, dude. I see all the guests that you have on this, and I was like, I would love to do that podcast. So when you asked, I was so excited.
I've been bugging you for a while, man. I'm like, I hope he's not getting annoyed. I'm just asking him every chance that I get.
No, dude. I love it. Heck, all about it.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to sit down. Let's chop it up for a little bit. Who's this guy following you?
So we've got a couple guys here. We've got Nick, who does a little work with me there.
Yeah.
From back home. I usually bring Nick and his wife whenever I go travel to stuff like this. He actually owns a gym.
Okay.
Back home. And
a CrossFit boxer.
OTM. And Over the Mountain Fitness. It's based out of Birmingham.
Sweet.
And then Louie from RX Smart Gear.
Dope.
Dude, fire content from Louie, bro.
Yeah, I bet. Look at that rig he's got, man. I gotta ask him for some advice.
He actually has a holster. I can have him show it to you. You see, he's got another camera slung like a... Talking about the holster there, Louie.
Yeah, kind of like a little pistol out of
him.
Yeah, camera
he's the
shot.
Man, baby. He's the man.
Heck yeah, dude. That's amazing.
Yes.
Well, hey, welcome back to another episode of The Counter Culture. I am here with...
Let's go. Evan Slaughter, Fit to Serve.
Dude, I didn't have to say from where. You just said it. I appreciate that.
Yes, baby.
Media trained. So, Evan, how'd you get your start in this content game?
Man, I get asked that a lot, you know, because a lot of people see me doing fitness stuff and they're not sure if I actually do fitness stuff or not, right? But I just was doing sketch comedy, started on TikTok and then kind of translated onto Instagram. And I was doing it around things that I was getting involved in. So
yeah.
Pickleball was a big one for me.
Yeah.
It still is.
I love that content of yours, dude. Every single time,
it. The
pickleball content.
I hit it at the right time because it started taking off. And then I was getting into CrossFit at the same time and trying to work on my health and get back into fitness. And so I just started doing sketch comedy around that, you know?
Yeah, cool. Let's take it back a little bit. Like when you were younger, right? A kid.
Yeah.
How many siblings do you got? Are you an only child? What was growing up like?
So, grew up, born and raised in Alabama.
Okay.
One older brother. My parents, my dad actually at the time, they were in their early 20s when they had us. My mom was not planning for kids at the time. And I love telling this, and she hates it when I tell this, but I'm going to tell it. She's actually on birth control at the time when she got pregnant with me and my brother.
No way.
So talk
All
about
right.
a double whammy, bro.
Miracle babies right there.
Yeah, I was like, Mom, you may not have wanted us, but God did. You
know? Yeah, hell yeah, dude.
No, she definitely, you know, loves us, pumped that it was happening. You know, she got pregnant with me and my brother. He's 18 months older.
Okay.
Yeah, man, and so grew up just typical, you know, middle class home and family. And my dad was working as a cattle farmer, actually, on my uncle's land.
Wow.
And when found out that, you know, my mom's pregnant.
Yeah.
He moved us to Birmingham, went back to school, finished, got his degree and got a job so he could, you know, afford to have, you know, me and my brother.
Sweet, dude. So growing up, were you like, were you a kid that was kind of interested in entrepreneurship or like comedy, things outside of like the status quo?
Yeah, I would say so, man. I've always been the funny guy. I used humor a lot of times, especially growing up, to fit in, to meet people, to you know, a lot of times because I'm not a big dude, you know, not tall. So I would use comedy a lot of times, like as a way to kind of fight my battles too. So if you know, someone was making fun of me or like kids do in school, I was really good at coming back at them.
Yeah.
You know, just had a real smart mouth growing up, just kind of witty. Always loved comedy though, always involved in it. And then the entrepreneurship side of it really came whenever I kind of decided I wanted to pursue something. I liked being in charge of, you know, kind of shaping my own future per se. I think that's what's exciting about entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
You take a risk, dude, you put yourself out there and it's a risk, you know, it's a big risk. I think that's why a lot of people maybe stay away from it. But it excited me to do something like that.
Yeah, so that's interesting too, because I think I saw on your page that you were also in the military, right?
Yeah.
Which is also a big risk, you
exactly,
know?
Exactly, yeah.
So was getting into high school and like going into your, you know, your adult years, was that the plan always to go to the military, or what kind of brought you into that field?
You know, so I was actually, believe it or not, in really good shape in my late teens, early 20s. I was actually studying exercise science in college, did some personal training stuff for a little while.
Yeah.
And then just kind of got the bug. You know, I was like I said, early 20s. I had just kind of dropped out of college. I'd done about 2 years. I dropped out because I was doing what I wanted to do anyways, which was be in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
And then just one day I was like, man, I want something, I think, with a little more security. And I also want to earn some money for school if I decide to go back, serve my country, do all those things. I had two granddads that served. So I was like, I'm gonna go serve. Some friends were serving around that time. I think I joined in 2010. So, you know, 6 years after 9/11. So a lot still going on then.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go as far as I could go, man. Got in there, went infantry in the Army, airborne school, went to Special Forces Selection.
Wow.
Went hard at
Holy
it, dude.
Shit.
And wound up at a long-range surveillance unit in Fort Hood, Texas, deployed to Afghanistan, and got out a little bit after that when we got back and loved every minute of it.
Damn, dude. Well, I appreciate your service. That's fucking
thanks,
awesome.
Dude. I appreciate
That's
it,
That's great. Getting back to, so you went to school for exercise science. It seems like you like the path less beaten, right?
Yeah.
So what took you to college in the first place? And then what brings you out of school? I know that you said that you started doing what you wanted to do already, but I see that entrepreneurial side in you. So what even brought you there in the first place?
Dude, you know, so I think, honestly, I'm 38 years old, so.
Young.
38
young.
Years young. Yeah. I think for the most part, you know, it's still around that time where that's just kind of what you did if you could, you know, like. Still with that mindset, like, oh, you got to go to college to get a good job. You know, that's kind of the mentality I was raised in. The family, you know, everyone in my family went to college, fortunately, that kind of stuff. And so for me, it was like, when you finish high school, you go to college.
Yeah.
You know, but what my parents didn't plan on was me not doing so great in school.
Yeah.
So,
did you get caught up in partying and all that?
Well, I mean, yeah, dude, I definitely partied, man. I played sports up until high school, was very athletic up until high school, kind of lost some motivation, was one of those kids that just really didn't study a lot, didn't do a lot of homework, and just kind of made it through with C's.
Yeah.
And then wound up, you know, going to a little private Christian school actually in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, cool.
And so went there and then transferred a couple years later back to Birmingham to go to UAB. And then after that, I was like, I just can't continue doing this. I'm just spinning my wheels. I got to do something else, you know. So my parents weren't pumped about it, but I knew kind of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. And I feel like, especially now, it's like, dude, so many less people are going to college because you can, instead of spending that money, go pursue what you're passionate about, you know?
There's so much more opportunity now with the internet, social media, all that stuff. And also, you can learn everything on YouTube.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the STEM fields, right? Like, I tell all my kids, because I train kids, too. I tell them, like, hey, if you don't know what you want to do yet, don't waste the money going to school.
Right, yeah.
It's a lot of fucking money to have no clue.
Yeah.
Right? What's the conversation like, though, with your parents when you tell them, hey, I'm out. I'm not doing school.
You know, my parents have always been supportive. You know, they've always been supportive. I can definitely say that. They've always wanted what's best for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the way I presented it at first was, well, I'm going to take a break from college so I could sell it to them a little bit easier.
But you knew deep down it wasn't a break. It was
I wasn't coming back, you know, or at least not anytime soon.
Right.
And so, you know, I think they were kind of on board with that. And like I said, I had gone and taken the initiative to get a personal training certificate. I had a friend that had opened a gym that wanted me to manage the gym and personal train there. So I was making decent money for my age and had a career path. So it wasn't like I'm dropping out of college and not doing anything. After
you weren't a bum.
Yeah. So they were all right with it.
All right, cool. And then going from college personal training, what made you like, what like really ingrained it in you that you wanted to go to the military was the next step for you?
You know, honestly, like I said, I had some friends that had served straight out of high school that were kind of telling me about it. I remember a friend came home one time, he was in the Marines, came home from Iraq, was showing me all these cool pictures and talking about all this cool stuff he was doing. And I was always intrigued by it. And I think I had this mentality too that like I wanted to be the most badass version of myself I could be, you know?
Yeah.
So whenever I go into something, I go into it with the mindset of I'm going to go 100% into this,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that was kind of the mindset I took there into the military. And also it was nice like to have a little bit of like it felt like a career path for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it as a career. But there were definitely a lot of benefits to going and doing it. It was a little bit more job security.
Comes out with opportunities and stuff,
yeah,
too. Yeah,
for sure. And, yeah, I just got that bug, dude, and went and joined.
I think everybody at some point has the want to be, like, a military dude for
yeah.
the same reason. Because they're like, I want to be a badass. And it happened so late in life for me, dude. It was COVID when all that stuff happened. Yeah, I was like. And I think I was like 25 when COVID happened. I'm 30 now. Wait, 30. So like what, 26, 27?
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be a fucking SEAL. I want to be badass. I want to serve my country. And that lasted for a whole 3 days.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think I'm cut out for
it. Yeah. Dude,
yeah.
There's so much of that. And like people that, I mean, and I get it. You just don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
I was, it was funny because I knew nothing about joining the military. Even though I had friends that served, I knew nothing about the process. And I didn't do any research into it. I literally, in my mind, had this expectation of, like, you go talk to a recruiter, you sign up, and then you get on a bus the next day, and you leave and go to basic training, and that's not how it is at all. Like, I first went and talked to the Marine Corps, and it was a process. I had to get people to write something about me, you know, references, letters of recommendation. I had tattoos below my PT shirt line, so I had to have pictures taken in a PT uniform. Now, mind you, the Marine that's recruiting me has tattoos all the way up on his neck, so those policies go back and forth.
Yeah.
But
if they
just,
like you, you can have them wherever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so it was just more of a process than I thought. And then when we get done, they're like, "All right, yeah. So you'll do, you'll do our pre. You know, we have a program before you leave for boot camp. You come here once a week. We help get you in shape. You'll leave in about 9 months for boot camp." And I was thinking, damn, I don't even know if I want to be in the Marines in 9 months.
Right.
You know? Like, I thought we were leaving today.
I want it now.
I was going to call my Marines and go, "Hey, guys, I'm getting on a bus and going to boot camp, Paris Island."
Yeah.
So then I go to the Army, and it was kind of not exactly the same thing, but they were leaving in about 2 or 3 months. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. And so I went and joined.
Did you have any doubts in those 2 to 3 months? Were you like, I don't know if I made the right decision?
No. I think I was ready. I mean, I knew what I was going to do, or I knew that I was ready to leave. And I was 14 years ago is whenever I signed up. So whatever that would be, you know, 24. So, you know, I was young, no relationship at the time, you know.
That's good.
It was a good time to go and do it.
And you said that you made it all the way. You went to Special Forces?
I went to Special Forces Selection.
What is that?
So it's kind of a... They have a program in the Army called 18 X-Ray.
Okay.
And what that is basically when you sign up to join the military, if you qualify for an 18 X-Ray contract, it means that you get to go to what's called SOPC after basic training. Actually, it means you go to basic training, you go to airborne school, get jumped qualified, then you go to SOPC in Fort Bragg, which stands for Special Operations Preparation and Conditioning.
Okay.
And then if you pass that, you go to selection. And selection is, you know, SOPC is 21 days and selection is 21 days. So you get, if you pass, you go to selection. So I was actually joined just as an infantryman. I went to infantry school. And during infantry school, there were three guys in the company that had 18 X-ray contracts that decided midway through infantry school that they didn't want to do 18 X-ray anymore.
Okay.
So they withdrew from their 18 X-ray program, and that left three contracts available for anybody in our company. So the drill sergeants took the top three PT scores, physical fitness scores, and offered them to the first top three, and I was number three.
No way. That's crazy.
I was a badass back then.
Yeah, that's great,
so,
dude.
Top three, right?
Yeah.
So I go, I accept it, and mainly I accepted it, again, one, because a friend of mine told me, if you get offered things in the military, schools, say yes. Even if you don't know what it is or you think it sounds cool, just say yes if someone's offering you. So that's the mindset I took. And so I said yes, and I went to a lot of the reason I did it was because I wanted to go to airborne school.
Mm.
You know, you always hear about airborne infantry.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be an airborne infantryman. And so it was a guaranteed right after infantry school, you go to airborne school. And so I was like, yeah, let's do that. So I graduate infantry school. I go to airborne school, which is 3 weeks right there at Fort Benning. So I didn't even have to go to a different base. Did infantry school at Fort Benning, went over to across the other side of the base, did airborne school, graduate airborne school, get on a bus right after graduation, go up to Fort Bragg and start SOPC, which there's a holdover period because it was summertime. So you're basically just in the barracks at Fort Bragg getting smoked by the, you know, sergeants you go to SOPC.
Oh, geez.
So I go to SOPC, dude. I passed SOPC the first time through. It was 21 days out at Camp McCall. It's tough. It's land nav. It's classes. It's, 15 to 18 mile ruck marches in the middle of Fort Bragg, you know, by yourself. It's, you know, it's tough.
It's tough, yeah.
And so I pass it. And so I come back, and I was supposed to have about a month to recover and everything before going to selection. Well, then we get back and find out that like 10 people were kicked out of the course. I think one violated, you know, the traveling rules without getting a pass to travel on the weekend.
Mm.
Some other guys maybe dropped out, you know, medical reasons. So about 10 people. So 10 slots open up.
Wow.
So they start calling the names for the next selection class. Literally, I got back on a weekend. The first selection class was the following weekend. They start calling down the list of names. So, mind you, I'm smoked. I'm broken off. I'm tired. I'm ready to rest. Just finished SOPC. I'm like, let's celebrate. I'm going to go home on a weekend pass, chill. You know, I get back. They call 10 names. Mine's the last name called.
Again.
I'm like, fuck, dude.
Yeah.
So I have to go. I have 1 week to repack all my stuff, clean my uniforms, do all this shit, and get ready to go right back out to Camp McCall for 21 days. So I get out there, and the first event is called Event Week. And the last event of that week is actually a ruck march. And it's a, they don't tell you how long the distance of the ruck march is. They don't, you can't ruck with anybody else, so you can't talk to anybody, all this different stuff. So I go do the ruck march, right? And what a lot of times guys will do is you have to have 45 pounds in your rucksack,
mm-hmm.
In your rucksack. You have to have 2 liters of water. All right, they don't count the water weight because it's diminishing weight.
Okay.
You drink it while you move, right?
Yeah.
So you're gonna lose that weight. Mm-hmm. Well, what a lot of guys will do is as soon as they step off, they'll kind of turn the corner and dump the water because they want to lose the weight, and they just think, well, I'm hydrated enough to make it however long we're going.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
It's actually a safety violation in selection. So if you get caught, you're kicked out of the course.
Wow.
So they have random way stations along the, you don't know when they're going to be. It just pops up. You turn the corner, and you're like, shit, here's a way station. They don't stop everybody. They just randomly grab guys and weigh their rucksack. So I'm rucking. There's a guy about 20 feet in front of me, and they grab him for a random way, and he had dumped his water.
No way.
So he gets kicked out of the course right there.
And you like watch it happen?
And they think, that because I'm rucking close to him, that maybe we're buddies and we know each other, and that I did the same thing. So they stop me and weigh my rucksack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it sucks. So you have to, you know, you've been moving for about 10 miles, you're in a groove, you don't want to stop. You don't want to take the rucksack
off. Because it's going to suck to start again.
All the acid and stuff coming to your muscles as soon as you stop, all that stuff. So I have to stop, take my rucksack off, and you don't get a time stop. The time's running, you know.
Right.
They may weigh my rucksack. I pass. I put it back on and start moving again. And as soon as I took that next step, dude, I was like, this is not good.
Uh-oh.
This is not good.
Uh-oh.
So I made it. I finished the ruck, but I came in like 8 or 9 minutes, 10 minutes after the cutoff time. So I was, you know, didn't pass, but I was allowed to come back as many times as I want. So as long as you're not a voluntary withdrawal, meaning you just quit, you can do selection as many times as you want. But it actually turned out good because I wound up getting picked up for a long-range surveillance unit in Fort Hood.
Okay.
So it was pretty bad.
So you didn't end up doing it again?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So all this is like this.
Long story for explaining all that, but
no, it was
I had
great.
To break
story.
It down.
And I appreciate you taking the time to do that. So, but something that's like standing out to me too is this like hard mindset that you have. You like have the David Goggins mindset. It almost seems like, right? Yeah. But you're the comedy guy.
Right.
So where do you think that you developed this like wherewithal in yourself that you can like handle a fucking 15-mile ruck with 45 pounds, 2 liters of water, and no quit? Like you're feeling like this sucks, this fucking sucks, I have to stop now, and you don't voluntarily withdraw, you continue going.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're born with it, if it's instilled with you from a young age. I've always been competitive. I've always been one that never wanted to quit, you know, and I think I maybe developed that a lot whenever I got into the gym at a younger age. I think I started lifting, you know, 14, 15 years old, getting serious about weightlifting, and was always just got real into it. And then whenever you surround yourself with a community of guys and girls that are trying to do the same thing, they're driven, you know, I met some people, because people come from all over the Army to do selection, and you meet some badasses.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, you meet, so the way I went into selection was through the 18 X-ray program, which I've actually heard a lot of people say that that's actually not the best way to do it.
Okay. Why?
Because you're new to the military, you have no military experience, you don't know how the military works, you're not, you know, you don't know anything about it, you're just coming in green. Mm. You know, you've never been assigned to an actual unit, you've never deployed, you've never done anything really with the military.
Yeah.
So when you go to something like selection, you actually don't wear any rank or names. You actually just have a number on you. So you're candidate 617.
Mm.
So you're in there with high, you know, officers, you know, privates, sergeants, higher ranking people, but there's no rank.
Yeah.
And the reason they do that is because they're trying to keep everybody on a level playing field.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. You know? Could play to your benefit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just makes it equal for everybody, and there's no one pulling rank on you. So like when you're in a tent with somebody and they're like, hey, private, you're taking my fire guard shift because I don't want fire guard tonight, where, you know, everybody has to get up at some point in the night and stand at the door for an hour and do fire guard.
Yeah.
So you got to wake up at 2 a.m. and go stand there at fire guard for an hour. You know, if there was rank, you know, they could come up and go, hey, dude, you're doing mine.
And you know? Just have to
and
do it?
And you just would have to do it. So there's no rank. You know, that's why they do that.
Yeah.
They keep a lot of that BS out of there.
That's cool.
So, you know, it's got its place. But when you're around these other guys, especially, you know, so the point is that you've got guys coming to selection that have deployed multiple times. You've
right.
got guys that are Ranger qualified coming. You've got guys, we had a guy that was had a Special Forces scuba badge, which is like very rare to get, you know, come in there. So you're in there with all these guys that are like
bad motherfuckers.
Yeah, they're about to smoke fucking selection, dude.
Yeah,
these are the guys getting selected. You know, so that drives you and pushes you, and you see that, for at least someone like me, you see someone like that, they don't complain, they suck it the fuck up, they, you know, and they push themselves and they survive and they do it. And I think from being around people like that, it gave me for sure my own motivation and my own drive to do that.
Hell yeah, dude. That's a fucking awesome story. And I agree with you.
It gets me excited talking about it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's cool. It's a really cool story. And I agree with you, like in any facet of life, I'm sure it's like huge, like way, way bigger in the military. But like,
yeah.
As long as you surround yourself with the right people, you're going to succeed in that avenue.
Dude, I heard someone say one time, show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
My mom used to say that all the time.
Love it, right?
Yeah.
Love it, because it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Who
yeah.
you surround yourself with is what you're probably going to, you know, definitely going to influence you to turn out a certain way, you know. So once I got back into the CrossFit community and stuff, it inspired me to start taking better care of my physical health.
Right.
You know, so it's a prime example.
Yeah. So after the military, what do you end up doing?
So I go to the military. You know, I was actually injured in Afghanistan. We hit an IED. I was the gunner in a truck that hit an IED. And it was actually pretty bad because there were two convoys. We were going out to a checkpoint. The first lead truck of the first convoy from our unit hit an IED, and it blew the doors open, rolled the truck over simultaneously. And the guy that was in the back seat, Corporal Gross, he fell out and the truck squished him.
Oh,
and
geez.
Killed him. So
I'm sorry to hear
we're
that,
like
man.
In a month into deployment, and we're responding to a KIA, you know. So that was when, for me, it was like, damn, shit just got real, you
what
know.
What is a KIA?
Killed in action.
Oh, okay.
So we're going out there to help, you know, pull security. A lot of times when that'll happen is when you get ambushed. You know, they'll blow a truck up and then just start attacking you because you're like panicking. You don't know what's going on. So I'm in the lead truck of the convoy coming to help out and pull security.
Yeah.
And I'm in a stand-up gun turret, and it's rough terrain. We're bouncing around through the desert, driving fast, trying to get out there, and boom, we hit a secondary IED. And that's another way they attack. They'll, you know, hit the first IED, run back about 50 meters, put another IED in the ground, knowing that a convoy is about to come through to help out,
yeah.
And then they get you on that second one. So I got injured, nothing major, dislocated a tendon in my left ankle, had some bumps and bruises, I was okay.
Yeah.
I was able to stay in Afghanistan. I finished the whole 12-month deployment. When we got back, it was hard for me to continue to jump out of airplanes and helicopters because my ankle was just not great. So instead of deciding to continue into the military, I decided to get out.
Yeah.
And did about 4.5 years, get out, and then I go back home to Birmingham and, you know, where I'm from. And didn't know what I was going to do for a little while. Struggled for a little bit with some opiate addiction because I was on a lot of painkillers and had some addiction issues previously in my family and stuff like that in my life. And so I'm sitting here like, don't know what I'm going to do, fighting this opiate addiction, and just kind of lost at the time.
Yeah.
You know? So
are you comfortable talking about a little bit the IED experience?
Yeah.
So, again, thank you for what you've done.
Yeah.
Because, dude, I have tried to put myself in, like, those situations, right? Because I feel like so many people think that they're a badass, right?
Yeah.
But you're literally on the ground, like, somebody I know just got killed. I have to go maybe get,
right.
like, killed,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Right? So what's the feeling like? Like, what's the experience when you're going through that?
Dude, it's, you know, it's a weird thing to describe because at the time, I'm not thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking about it.
What are you thinking about?
Well, it shocked me when I heard KIA. And they were telling us that. They're like, hey, guys, because, you know, you don't know how deployment's going to be. You know, I had a young, immature mindset. I'm of that mindset. Nothing's going to happen to me. I'm invincible. You know, and then you get in Afghanistan, you get in the country, and then, boom, hit an eye. You know, someone's killed from your unit, you know, and you're like, shit, dude. I forgot. We're at war in Afghanistan right now.
Yeah.
What's great about it, not great, but what gets you through that, at least in my experience, was being there with leaders that had been there before.
Yeah.
Because we had platoon sergeants and platoon leaders, officers, whatever, that had been to deployment, that had witnessed KIAs, that had, you know, and they help you get your shit together.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of times it's that alone. So you do your job. They train you to do your job. My job was to get on the gun, you know, get in the lead truck that I was assigned to, man the gun, and fucking do my job.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, yeah, and I feel like a lot of, like, especially here in America, right, because it's like a first world country, there's not really, like, unless you live in the hood, there's not much to worry about.
Yeah.
Right? And people have this distorted perspective of this can't happen to me.
Sure.
This will never happen. And Joe Rogan says it on his podcast sometimes where he's like, it's possible for war to come here. Like,
yeah.
We just have such a distorted view. People don't realize it's possible. That could be us,
yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wild, dude. That's absolutely wild. Okay. So you struggled with opiate addiction, too. That was something that you said, right? What was the most integral part of you being able to, like, get over that?
Admitting that I needed help.
How did you do that?
When did you
realize it?
So that was my biggest problem, was not being honest with myself, not being honest with other people. And if you talk to anybody that's recovered from an addiction, at least in my experience for the most part, you're probably going to hear the same thing. You know, people in AA circles and stuff like that, self-help stuff, talk a lot about honesty, right? Well, I wasn't being honest with other people because I didn't want them to think a certain thing about me or feel a certain way. And I wasn't honest with myself. So, you know, the way that ultimately, and it was a battle, man. It was years of on and off, you know. But ultimately, what broke me down was things getting shitty enough to where I was like, I can't live this way anymore. I'm either going to die, end up in prison, or I do something about it.
Yeah.
Right. And fortunately for me, I had good friends, good family that could recognize something was not right and offer me a solution. And the solution for me was going to a treatment center, you know, that was about 3 months long that I didn't want to do, that I was like, fuck, 3 months? Yeah. No, I can't do that.
Right.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
But you did 6 years in the military.
Yeah, you did 6 years. And it's also your life. It's so funny because you think you have all this shit going on. And at the time that I went to treatment, I didn't have shit going on. I had just gotten out of some jobs. I was spending all my money trying to feed this opiate addiction. I was, you know, so I 3 months somewhere else was paradise, you know. But in your mind, you're like, oh, I got all this. I got to find a job now. I got to do, you know.
There's too much going on.
You got to get sober first. You know what I mean? So what I did was, you know, went to that three-month treatment center. I did the 3 months there, you know, which gives you a lot of time to kind of physically get off of whatever you're addicted to. And then you learn kind of how to live life after that. And that's what it did for me.
What was it like reintegrating into, like, society, I guess, or, like, into real life? Because, I mean, from the addicts that I've talked to, it's, like, difficult. You know, they got to kind of figure out how, like, life really works.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case. So, like, for me, it was, you know, I was also in my 30s, you know, mid-30s. So I felt like I was also growing up a little bit, like maybe I grew up a little bit too late, and then finally now that I've gotten off all this stuff and it was time to get my shit together, I felt like I was growing up kind of at the same time. So when I came out, I felt like I was kind of ready to make some changes and excited about it, you know, because I knew that the way I was living before, I was not even coming close to what I could have performed at in my life. Like it was limited so badly by the struggles with this addiction that I wasn't performing at optimal level. So once I did finally get off of that, I was a little bit excited about the opportunity to go out and really do something now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which led to me doing the comedy stuff. So
I fucking
beautiful.
Love that, dude. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know where I learned pickleball?
Huh.
In rehab.
No way, really?
So, yeah.
So you were on it early.
Yeah. So I learned pickleball in this rehab, and then I get out of there, and I, like, continue pickleball, start making sketch comedy around pickleball, and now it's one of the biggest... You know,
fastest growing sport, right?
Yeah, and it, you know, it also, I've got a lot of pickleball sponsors. I do a lot of work with pickleball. I've got my own paddle out now. I've got, you know, it's just beautiful how that comes together.
That's fucking awesome. It's God's plan, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on top of that, though, I remember seeing a clip that you said, or maybe we talked about this, that you were working, but then you sold some real estate or something.
Yeah.
And that's how you took the leap. So look. How old were you when you, like, decided I'm gonna do the leap and do social media?
36 and a half.
All right, so dude, you don't see that a lot, right?
No,
like
no,
people
no.
in their 30s, like taking. I'm 30 and I'm deciding to take a risk and going all in on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't see that a lot. So, what is that like? Like, how did you do it? How did you? You're 36. You're probably pretty ingrained in your ways. Maybe it has something to do with you saying that you don't feel like you grew up, like, you know, right away.
Yeah.
So how did you take that leap? Was it scary?
I mean, yeah, there's always some fear in taking that kind of leap and taking that step. I was on another podcast not long ago with another veteran, Zach. He's got an account called Veteran with a Sign, really successful veteran account. Out of Nashville, I go up there, do the podcast, and we were both kind of talking because I shared a lot of the same stories on there, and he was talking about how I think we as veterans, especially combat veterans, like the chaos.
Yeah.
So, like, when you get out, you know, you see a lot of veterans struggle with chaos and or addiction and stuff like that because they're used to that chaos. Deployment's the same way. It's chaos a lot of times, you know, but we thrive in that environment. So when you get out and you go to a regular office job now and you just had come out of a, you know, long-range surveillance infantry unit and deployed to Afghanistan and done all this Purple Heart recipient and done all this stuff that I've done, and then you go sit in an office and try to sell multifamily real estate or manage multifamily real estate, you're like, fuck this.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I found a lot of comfort in abusing opiates, because I enjoyed that chaos, right? So that's kind of what it's like for me now. It's my form of pursuing that chaos, but in a healthy way.
Do you think some of it has to do, too, with, like, being purpose-driven? Because in the military, you have other people that are relying on you. You have a purpose every single day.
Yeah.
And then when you go sell real estate or whatever, it's kind of like not for everybody. It might be some people's purpose, but yours is much. Yours was much greater than selling a house.
Yeah.
Do you think it has to do with that?
Dude, I mean, what a perfect question. I mean, that's a really good question, and it's. I totally believe in that. That's what Fit to Serve for me is about. You know, using the name Fit to Serve, I believe we all have a purpose. I believe we all are made fit, not necessarily physically fit, but equipped to carry out that purpose, right? And then what is that purpose? So I oftentimes use the reference of a school teacher. I could never do that job.
Yeah.
I just couldn't see myself doing that job. I couldn't sit in there and educate kids, you know, especially younger kids, and be patient and be kind. But there are people that are made and born, I believe, to do that. Yeah. You know, you talk to teachers that are really good at their job, they love it.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, that's a version of them kind of carrying out their purpose. They don't do it for the money, because God knows we, you know, they don't get paid a bunch of money.
They don't get paid enough. You
know, not at all.
Yeah.
And so, but they do the job anyway,
yeah.
You know, because they enjoy it. They love it. So that's how I feel about comedy and what I'm doing. And so I believe that when you are living out your purpose, and you're truly doing it because you really enjoy what you're doing, that all the other stuff will come.
Yeah.
You know, you enjoy doing this podcast and talking with different guests and all the stuff you do, coming to these events, you know, you ain't even got to worry about the other stuff because it'll happen for you.
Yeah, the people will come, the money will come, everything else will come when you're on your purpose.
Yeah, I believe that.
How big of a role do you think God has to play with that?
For me, it's a big role. You know, I've learned a lot about, or tried to learn a lot about God over my life, and it's changed a lot for me. I grew up in a very conservative Christian, went to church 3 times a week home, you know, twice on Sunday, Wednesday night. I grew up in that environment, you
wow.
know, very Southern Christian, you know, typical home. And so I had a warped concept about God. For
yeah.
me, it was like I was putting God in a box. And I was like, all right, God lives at church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you don't go to church, you go to hell.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I think we have all gone through that.
That's what I believe.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with how, I mean, a little bit with how I was raised, but it's not my parents' fault, you know?
Right.
It was just, and then I realized, like, when I started struggling with addiction issues and stuff like that, I was like, going to church isn't going to help me.
Yeah.
You know, and it actually, for a while, made me kind of, It hurt my relationship with God.
Resentful
big time,
a little bit?
Because I was resentful
yeah.
big time. And I was like, I grew up going to church. I do all this stuff, you know, and still, you know, this happens. And so I learned a lot, man. It's changed so much for me. I think God is a lot bigger than what I grew up believing God is. Like, I don't even know how to define God. And I think that's the purpose of it, is like, I don't know God. I don't know how to define God.
Yeah.
I believe that there is a God, and that he's operating in my life, because I don't think we could have what we have and what all human beings have created and done. Like, this can't be an accident, dude.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? At least that's what I believe.
No, I agree with you 100%. I was an atheist, a hardcore
yeah.
atheist for a long time.
Sure.
And then one day I just kind of had this, like, wake-up call where I was like, dude, I remember I was walking down the street looking at the stars, and I'm like, there's something else to this, man. I just feel so small
yeah.
in this big universe.
Yes.
It's crazy. So, dude, what do you got? What plans do you got for Fit to Serve?
Man, I'm enjoying continuing to do the comedy stuff. It's continuing to grow. I love working with the different brands that I've worked with. You know, RX Smart Gear, Spirited Hive, they're here. Ice Barrel, I've done a lot of work with. Blokes is another one. I mean, I've been blessed so many. Valera Pickleball, all these different people that have, you know, encouraged my journey and partnered right alongside with me. We make killer content with. I definitely want to keep those relationships growing, continuing to bring laugh and humor to people, because I get so much, and even here at events like this, it humbles me, motivates me, amazes me when people come up and they really share how inspired they were by my comedy
yeah.
to get back into the gym and stuff like that. Because, you know, I'm not freaking the most fit CrossFitter guy, you know. And I found out from doing that, there's a lot of people that aren't, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's been cool to see people come up. So as long as that continues to happen and grow, that's the plan there. But also to, especially in 2024, I want to grow the YouTube side of things a little bit bigger, do some longer sketches, maybe some 6, 7, 8, 9 minute sketches, and
hell
start
yeah,
kind of
dude.
Growing my YouTube a little bit.
Cool, man. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down.
Yeah,
I love the stories. It's amazing. I think there's a side of you that at least I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've watched a couple of your podcasts, and every time I hear you tell the story about why Fit to Serve, I love it even more. So, dude,
man,
thank you so much for everything that you're doing. I appreciate you. Plug anything that you want to plug.
Dude, I mean, just you're already wearing a big one of the reps here. Again, all the pickleball sponsors I work with, you can go to my page, Fit to Serve. It's Fit to Serve 1 on Instagram because somebody has just the Fit to Serve account. I'm gonna reach out to them at some point. Fit to Serve 1 on Instagram, Fit to Serve on TikTok and YouTube. You can, if you search Fit to Serve, you'll find my little logo with the glasses looking, you know, speaking over the logo thing. But thank you for giving me a platform here to talk about, you know, share my story, man, and I love what you're doing, dude.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah,
so
bro.
Thanks. Like, subscribe, do all that. We'll talk to y'all on the next one.
Awesome.